This economy stinks. Got your attention now, don't I? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Friday, the 29th of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Stinks isn't an official economic term as far as I know, but if you look at today's report on second quarter gross domestic product, up what you can really only call a miserable 1.2%, and stinks, and miserable, do seem appropriate. But hey, why listen to me? Felix Salmon is here. He's at Fusion Lee Gallagher, is at Fortune Magazine. They are both in our studios in New York. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, Kai.
All right, Lee, you get first whack at this one. Test my thesis. Am I out of line if I say the economy stinks?
No, you're not out of line. It wasn't a great number. I mean, there's reasons why it is better than it looks. You know, a lot of this is due to a fall in inventories, which means that there might be a boost soon. And jobs, you know, there's this dichotomy right now between GDP and jobs. But, you know, think about it. This number doesn't even include what happened. This was pre-Brexit. It just shows a lack of confidence in the economy.
That's totally right. Felix, first quarter was revised downward. This is, I think, the third straight quarter of like 1%-ish growth. I put it to you.
The fourth quarter of last year was 0.8. First quarter was 0.9.
Yeah.
These are dreadful, dreadful figures. And I just look at these figures. You know what I think?
I don't know.
Japan.
Mm. Oh, do you really? That's terrible. What a horrible thing to say.
We've had zero interest rates for so long now that I think, you know, we are now really at danger of turning into Japan.
Wow.
But the thing about this cycle, it's been so long. It's been a 7-year recovery, but it's weak. The whole thing is weak.
Since the jump, it's been weak. Right, exactly.
Right. But the thing about this number, the consumer is showing surprising strength, which is interesting.
Which is interesting.
This is all business. This is business, not being confident, not doing well. Freaked out about what's happening. You know, every industry is being disrupted left and right, and then there's global situations to be worried about.
So, Felix, let me put this to you. We talk a lot about a jobless recovery, or we have in the past. How about you know, having growth with no jobs? Now we have jobs with no growth.
Yes. Yeah. It's just
the growthless recovery.
We are growing a little bit, which is quite good globally when everyone else is growing not at all. But there's really nothing to get excited about here.
Oh, all right. So just quickly, since you talked about interest rates, Felix, does this take the rest of the year off the table, do you think? I don't want to go too far into Janet Yellen land. The rest of the
Yes, it does.
Okay. Lee, you?
I think so.
Wow.
Definitely.
Okay.
Sometime in 150 years, we might get a rate hike. My grandchildren's grandchildren will say, the rate hike is finally here.
I remember when. All right. Let me play you to a piece of tape from Hillary Clinton's speech last night, and then we're going to spend a minute and 54 seconds talking about it. Here it is.
I believe our economy isn't working the way it should because our democracy isn't working the way it should.
Lee, if you take that to mean, just for the purposes of this discussion, that what happens in the headlines has become disconnected from what people are actually feeling, where do we go from here? Because every time we talk about Congress getting involved with the economy and the president and economic plans and all that, nothing good happens. So where do we go?
Well, I think a lot of what she was talking about is sort of de-rigging the system for the 1%. I mean, getting money out of politics, eliminating tax breaks for the wealthy, don't favor the banks, et cetera, et cetera. Where do we go? I mean, I think that's where she wants to go.
Except for the irony is that her opponent is the one who is about as far removed from the moneyed classes. Anyone with money is absolutely terrified of him. And she's the one who's getting all of the money. And the problem isn't
all the Wall Street money
now.
Specifically, right? I mean,
definitely. Yeah. The problem is not money in politics right now, certainly not in this election. The problem with the democracy not working is just that the people have lost all faith in their representatives. And so they just want to throw everyone out and replace it with chaos monkeys. And that's going to be scary.
Lee, do you think, without asking you two to turn into political analysts, do you think, since we are in the place now where the economy will be what it will be on election day, right? Do you think, who do you think this helps or hurts, today's number?
It's tricky. I mean, you know, the economy is not it's not on fire, so it's not like the voter's going to be fixed into what's happening today. But it's not so terrible that everyone is suffering as badly as I think some of the headlines
would say. You should ask Ray Fair, though, the great political scientist, actually has a model of plug in the GDP figure and I'll tell you who's going to win the next election. And right. if you plug the GDP figure into his model, you know who wins?
No, don't tell us. We're gonna talk to him next week. I'm going to call him and we're going to have the interview. What are you kidding? No. We've got to make people listen.
Okay. I'm Wait until
no,
next
no,
week.
No, no, no. Yeah, that's right. Felix Salmon is at Fusion. Lee Gallagher is at Fortune Magazine. Thanks, you two.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. On Wall Street today, it was up a hair. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Stocks, as I was saying a minute ago, did all right today. Not so, though, oil and oil companies. Crude brushed against three-month lows today. ExxonMobil, the biggest oil company in the country, announced second-quarter earnings that were down nearly 60% from a year ago to levels not seen since 1999 when, oh, by the way, Exxon and Mobil were separate companies. But as with all things oil, after a bust often comes a boom, so hang on to your hats. Marketplace's Jed Kim explains.
ExxonMobil's earnings fell $2.5 billion from 2015's second quarter. Continued low oil prices made upstream operations, its oil wells and production, take a big hit. Still, it could have been a lot worse, says Pavel Molchanov, an energy analyst at Raymond James.
Its earnings did not fall off a cliff to the extent that many other oil companies' earnings fell off a cliff.
That's because ExxonMobil isn't just an oil producer. It has a big refinery business, which has benefited from cheap oil prices for a long time. But now Exxon and other refiners have created a global glut of gasoline. Still, chemicals helped keep it in the black.
More than 70% of its earnings for the last 6 months have come not from producing oil and gas and not from refining or selling fuel, but from making petrochemicals.
Independent energy economist Philip Verleger says another thing that spared ExxonMobil from major drops was not pushing expansion when oil's price was high.
ExxonMobil maintained a cost discipline and didn't chase the high-cost rigs and the other high-cost operations.
Molchanov says that Exxon's diverse business model could keep it from making quick gains if oil prices do jump. The refining of petrochemical businesses have been a hedge against falling oil prices. When prices reverse, those businesses lose their advantage. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Tech earnings were big this week. Google parent Alphabet and Facebook reported blockbuster profits, powered largely by increases in advertising on mobile devices. Google and Facebook are, of course, the kings of the mobile ad space, but everybody else is going to have to figure it out or get left behind. Gigi Duban has that story.
To understand why companies are clamoring for ads on mobile devices, just take a walk down the street. Ari Lightman, professor of digital media and marketing at Carnegie Mellon, says you'll probably see this.
A variety of different folks from all generations glued to their cell phones, either looking at an app or playing Pokemon Go or trying to get directions.
And with mobile, he says, not only are companies like Google and Facebook collecting the usual info on you, like the sports teams you follow or those shoes you've been eyeing, they know where you are and when.
The analytics is incredibly impressive.
Those analytics help advertisers make decisions, like which ads to place where. Eric Brynjolfsson is director of the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy. He says timing is everything in advertising. Ideally, companies want users to see an ad and then right away click the buy button.
And to the extent that people move around in the world, mobile gives you a chance to get them in those situations more effectively.
But have you tried entering a 16-digit credit card number on a tiny smartphone keyboard? Ben Edelman is associate professor at Harvard Business School and says this is the downside of mobile.
If you want to buy a new laptop or plane tickets to Hawaii, doing that on your mobile still isn't as easy as some folks hoped it would be.
But as more companies figure out how to make it easier for people to buy on the go, expect to see even more mobile ads luring you to that virtual checkout line. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
If you're a budding entrepreneur looking to get a little traction for your idea, a good first step might be getting yourself into an accelerator. which might call a startup boot camp that whips early stage companies into shape and helps them find funding. That last part can be tricky, though, because A, startups are hard, but also, two, it's tough when your company is a little bit niche. From WPLN in Nashville, Emily Siner reports on a music technology accelerator that's trying to get more investors feeling comfortable with that industry.
Eric Mendelson and Winston Thomas are waiting backstage at the Country Music Hall of Fame, but they will not be crooning country tunes. They've come up with a music app, and this is their pitch day. Mendelson is about to ask a room full of investors to give them $450,000.
How are you guys feeling right now? You're about to go on.
Cool as a fan. Very good. He looks nervous. No. I know you can't see him, but he looks nervous.
Mendelson takes the stage in front of a giant projector screen. His company logo pops up.
My name is Eric Mendelson, and I'm the co-founder of Recordgram. Recordgram is the first mobile music and video recording studio that lets amateur artists create songs with award-winning music producers for under $5.
So the idea is that producers can upload their leftover beats on this app, and people can license them in their own work. It was co-founded by Sean Mims, the man behind this classic song of 2007. This is why I'm hot. I'm hot 'cause I'm fly. And Mendelson seems to share that swagger. He pitched confidently about Recordgram's numbers, its revenue potential, its unique features, but ultimately none of those investors in the audience bit. Mendelson says companies like his are a hard sell.
Getting investment in music technology is difficult, no matter what city you're in, even in San Francisco and New York and Austin and Los Angeles.
Here's the dilemma for music tech startups. They can try to court traditional tech investors, but Heather McBee, who put on this pitch day, says the music business is more complex than your average Silicon Valley startup.
You know, over the years, it's been a very volatile business in the sense it's constantly changing. The licensing of the rights are very, very complicated, and that scares some investors away.
Some music tech companies have made it, like Spotify and Pandora, but they're the exceptions. Others have failed spectacularly. The music streaming site Grooveshark, for example, had tens of millions of users before it was hit by a massive lawsuit and shut down last year. So tech investors are wary of getting involved. And on the other side, music companies, who you might think would be interested in music technology, they haven't been clamoring to invest either.
These guys are every day are running records up the charts and signing acts and making records and setting up tours and doing production and blah, 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 blah. Who's got time to think about tech?
Joe Galante can say this because he used to be one of them. He was chairman of Sony Nashville and saw the untapped potential of technology in the music business. So he decided to co-found an accelerator, and he thought he could make it work in Nashville.
You have basically a music capital here. Would it be unusual for music tech to come out of here? I don't think so. We just never did it before.
It's called Project Music, and over the past year, it's graduated more than a dozen music tech startups, many of which set up shop in Nashville afterward. They range from sheet music software to a karaoke platform. It's gotten some heavy hitters in the music business to put money into the accelerator. The Country Music Association is the lead sponsor. But Heather McBee, who runs the program, says it's not easy getting these companies on board.
It's called just connections and working the hell out of a Rolodex.
Some of the program's graduates have been successful. One of the most touted is Dart Music, a company that helps classical musicians sell their work online. It's raised nearly $1.8 million from investors. Galante thinks this will continue as music tech proves its worth.
I don't care what business you're in. People flock to success.
He just hopes that success will come out of Nashville. In Nashville, I'm Emily Siner for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we are talking about donuts and flamingos, and there's even a rogue pineapple in there.
The legal fight over pool floaties, for real. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's down 24 points today, 10%, 18,432. The NASDAQ up 7 points, 10%, 5162. The S&P 500 up 3 points, also 10%, 2173. For the week gone by, the 5 days that were, the Dow off 0.75%. The NASDAQ gained about 1.2%. The S&P 500 pretty much flat. Another big day for tech stocks after strong earnings reports. Google parent Alphabet rose 3.33%. Amazon up 0.8%. Facebook, however, off about 0.8%. Opening ceremonies for the Olympics in Rio are a week away. Comcast, which owns Disney, the broadcast network for the games, down 0.9%. Disney, parent to ABC, was flat. CBS parent Viacom off 1% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note down to 1.45%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Amid all the hoopla and the speechifying of the political conventions, it's easy to forget the party platforms. But in theory anyway, if not an actual fact out on the campaign trail, those platforms represent the party's official positions on the issues. Democrats have long officially supported protections for LGBTQ people in jobs and housing. This year's Republican platform expressed disapproval of gay marriage and offered a defense of businesses that deny services to LGBTQ people. Right now, 31 states allow job discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. One of those states is Florida, where 49 people were killed in a gay nightclub last month. So Marketplace's Lewis Wallace took a trip down there to talk to people about the costs of discrimination.
I'm outside the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts in Orlando, where a memorial has taken over the whole huge front lawn. There are flowers wilting in the heat, printed photos of the victims, and dozens of rainbow pinwheels are spinning in the wind. People wind through slowly, looking overwhelmed. I'm here to meet Catherine Gonzalez. She says since the Pulse tragedy, she hasn't been getting out much.
Fear has kind of taken over me a little bit more than it should have. I've been at home a lot more often. I say I love you to my partner a ton more than I should sometimes.
She says all this has been hard to take in because she's faced so many challenges already as a Puerto Rican transgender woman.
My first experience of transgender discrimination was when I was at the early point of my transition.
She went into a telemarketing job interview as herself, Kat, and she nailed it.
It went fantastic until I had to show identification.
Her ID documents still had her assigned sex and old name on them. The interviewer became suspicious when she presented her info. She didn't believe it was hers.
So they thought you'd stolen your own social security number.
That is true. And then once I showed the ID, that's when it kind of broke in, settled in for my interviewer that I was a transgender individual. At which point, she retracted the job offer immediately, said that it would be a danger to other women at the job site, and then had me escorted out by security.
And this situation isn't unusual.
It is a very, very pervasive thing.
Victoria Rodriguez-Roldan is with the National LGBTQ Task Force. She says the vast majority of transgender people report harassment or discrimination in the workplace. LGBTQ people overall are also more likely to live in poverty, especially people of color. But there's no comprehensive federal law covering discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. That's a patchwork.
There are 19 states plus the District of Columbia that have workplace protections.
And these laws depend on people pursuing cases against employers, which lots of folks don't have the energy or resources to do. Ash McGovern with the Center for American Progress says these realities are part of a vicious cycle. Trans people, especially women, may be excluded from school, from shelters and housing, then from jobs.
Black trans folks experience unemployment rates at about 28%.
And it's 14% for trans people overall. So lots of people turn to underground economies to survive. When Kat Gonzalez didn't get that telemarketing job, she had to move back in with family to avoid becoming homeless, and they weren't comfortable with her transition. So she was coming up with money to get hormones in secret. What did you do?
Oh, well, nothing I'm proud of.
One night during this period, she got in a nasty rollover car crash. While she was in the hospital, she says nurses and interns gawked at her body. By the way, while she's telling me all this, a jazz band sets up and starts to play in front of the memorial.
No more than a week after the incident, my mother came up to me and said, "While you were in the hospital, I did not know what was worse, the fact that you were dying on the table or the fact that everyone was calling you my daughter." And that resonates so deeply. Thank you, very sad music in the background, for helping my feelings.
She survived it, and with a sense of humor. But at the moment, Gonzalez says she is looking for a job. I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
This summer's already the hottest on record, which means if you can, you're spending a lot of time in the pool. And what's quality pool time, really, without some inflatable pool floaties? So today we are bringing back our series about the people and things of summer. It's called Summer, brought to you by
Imagination.
Wonderful products.
Brought to you by...
For a company called Big Mouth Incorporated, this season that should be a boom has developed a slow leak. Big Mouth says two competitors are passing off fake versions of its swimming pool floaties online and cutting out a big chunk of its profits. Polly Mossens wrote about it for Bloomberg Business. Polly, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
To start, I suppose we ought to define the types of inflatable pool toys we're talking about here, yeah?
Absolutely. So we are talking about donuts and flamingos, and there's even a rogue pineapple in there.
What's a rogue pineapple in a pool toy? Do you just like hang on to it and float?
A really gigantic pineapple.
So how did it come to pass, though, that if I go to Google and I Google inflatable pool toy, donut, or literally flamingo, up pops this whole list of basically identical things from a whole bunch of different sellers? How does that work?
So there's a ton of people that make especially donuts. That one isn't actually copyrighted by anyone. But this flamingo in this particular case is actually unique. It's got a slightly a quirkier design. It has a wing on it. So that flamingo in particular is actually patented. Everyone's flamingo is going to look a little bit different, even if everyone's donut floaty looks the same.
No kidding. Now, part of the reason we're talking to you about this is because of this issue of and counterfeit, I suppose, is a legal term, but it's not actual genuine articles on Amazon, right? That's the issue.
So this person who owns Big Mouth, he is saying that these people are making fake Big Mouth floaties. Big Mouth is a really recognized floaty company. They have deals with all the major retailers. So he's saying that other people are trying to knock off their name and their look, which has become iconic over the last couple years.
Give me a dollar amount of how much Steve Wampold, the owner of Big Mouth, the toy company, how much does he figure he's losing?
Well, the suit has damages of $4 million in it, and more specifically, just on the donut floaties, he can be losing as much as $20,000 a day.
That's like a whole lot of floaties.
That is a whole lot of floaties.
Amazon obviously has people, software, something to weed out counterfeit goods, not genuine goods.
It does. But the problem with Amazon is that they don't want people just filing these counterfeit complaints against people that are their competitors. There's a whole process you go through. You have to report that it's counterfeited good. You have to have the good in your hands and you say, you know, this is a problem. I'm issuing a report. And then Amazon begins their own investigation. So they're very diligent, which can be frustrating for someone like the owner of Big Mouth that wants to bring these complaints. But it also makes sense for Amazon because they don't want to, you know, close the account of someone that's actually a legitimate seller just because they're imposing on someone else's business.
What's your best guess for how this turns out for Steve Wampold, the guy who owns Big Mouth?
Well, these two particular people, Solo Fleet and Floating Panda, we don't know their real names, so those are their Amazon handles.
Wow.
They will not reply, most likely. That is what the lawyers are anticipating. That's what I'm anticipating as well. We don't know that they're based in the United States, so there's a chance that they might not even see the lawsuit and know what to do with it. And if they don't reply, then it can go into a judge's ruling.
In which case, one imagines they would be ruled against if they don't reply. How does that work?
That is what one imagines, but you never know. Even if a judge says, you know, you're seeking $4 million in damages total, we're going to give you $500,000. You don't know that he'll ever collect that $500,000.
Right.
I think in large part, this is just symbolic because the company is getting very frustrated with this. And Wampold specifically, he loves floaties like no one I've ever met loves floaties. And he just wants this to have some kind of resolution so he can start enjoying his pool toy company again.
Polly Mossens writes most recently about, fraudulent floaties on Amazon, pool toys for Bloomberg. Polly, thanks very much.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, in which I am not quitting my job, but if I were, it would be for this. The Smithsonian Institution is hiring a beer historian. Seriously, pay is $64,000 a year to do, and this is a quote from the job posting itself, archival and field research for a new initiative on American brewing history with special emphasis on the craft industry. Field research? Craft beer? Come on, man, really? Thank you. Just because I got in trouble for it once, let me say it again. I am not quitting. All right. The Dow off 24 points today at 10%, 18,432. The NASDAQ up 7 points, about a 10%, 5162. The S&P 500 up 3 points, a 10%, 21.73. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the vice president. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have a good weekend, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.